Today, I'm fortunate enough to have a returning guest, Michael Granoff, who's the founder and managing director of Maniv Mobility, a venture capital fund based in Tel Aviv that invests globally in startup companies at the intersection of transportation technology. Maniv was founded in 2015 and to date manages over $200 million with an investor base that includes over 20 strategic investors from the automotive industry. Michael has been very active in the whole area of transportation, both in the U.S. here in Israel. He's been involved with U.S. policy, U.S. presidential campaigns, and he's a guest that really knows what's going on with the electric vehicle sector, and that's one of the things we're going to mostly talk about today.
Wake up,
from Jerusalem, Israel, this is From the Midwest to the Middle East, the podcast that explores everything new in U.S. and Israeli economy. Here's your host, Philip Stein.
I'm really pleased to be having this podcast today. First of all,
this episode is brought to you by Philip Stein and Associates, the largest U.S. CPA firm in Israel, providing U.S. tax services to Israelis, Americans, corporations, startups, and anyone else needing them.
Michael, I have four friends that I walk with every morning. Two have switched their hybrid cars to EVs. One is waiting for his lease to end so he can switch to an EV. Myself and the other baby boomer in the group are still driving internal combustion engines. Do we reflect a good sample of where the ownership of cars is heading?
Yeah, I think you do. You might recall that I had thought that we were going to reach a much higher level of EV penetration much sooner than we have. But I've never wavered in believing that ultimately these will dominate because they are better products and they are cheaper and they don't contribute to perpetuating the monopoly of oil in transportation. And of course, they have other benefits like clean air and less noise. So, you know, there's been a lot of talk lately about sort of a plateauing on EV demand, particularly in the U.S. There's EVs sitting on lots and so forth. You know, I think this is just part of a normal consumer adoption curve. And I think it takes a little while for the next cohort of consumers to get ready to get into EVs. There's also issues of infrastructure outside of Tesla. A lot of the infrastructure for EVs has been spotty and unreliable, and that has discouraged a lot of people. But I think, you know, given the fundamentals, there's no question over time that we're going to continue to move in the direction of EVs.
Recently, I just read about sort of a cooling off of the excitement in the U.S. for EVs, that the traditional car manufacturers are pulling back on their EV production. Is that accurate, or is that just sort of a little blip in the trend?
It is accurate, but I think it will be relatively short-lived. And I think it's also a reflection of the fact that there has not been a ton of variety available in EV world to date. Only now are we beginning to see, you know, multiple models of SUVs and crossovers and passenger sedans, sports cars, pickups, et cetera. People are very particular about their cars, especially in the U.S. And, you know, as long as they've been limited to just a handful of similar models, I think demand has been limited. But I think now we're entering a period where, you know, automakers have really, for government policy reasons, among other reasons, have really gone all in on their EV policy. None of them are investing anymore in R&D around internal combustion. And they have, you know, more and more plans for more and more different models of EVs. And I think as the infrastructure catches up, and as consumers see more social proof in the form of their neighbors, I think adoption will accelerate once again in the coming years.
Okay, and as you've pointed out to me, sort of, I'll call it offline, that Israel really doesn't face the same problems as the U.S. in terms of infrastructure. It's kind of hard to get, you know, not find a place where you could charge I assume that Israel, at least I've read that they're planning to budget for even better infrastructure in terms of charging stations. Is that something in the immediate horizon?
Yeah, there is a fair amount of infrastructure already in place in Israel. And for those who are lucky enough to have a fixed overnight parking spot where they can install a charger, they really have very limited need for charging outside of the home, because there's no EV on the market now that has less than 400 or 500 kilometers. Not very many people go further than that in the day. If you're going on a big trip in the north or south, the infrastructure is there, and there'll be more of it to come. So, I'd say the only question is for those who don't have access to overnight charging. And even in that group, I'm seeing more and more adoption, where people are just relying on the fast chargers that are around to top up every now and then.
I know I've read something recently that Israel's trying to come up with some mechanism to replace the revenue that they're losing, or will certainly lose, on their gasoline taxes.
Yeah, well, that's a problem that is also being grappled with by some states in the U.S. And will be grappled with by all sorts of jurisdictions that have relied on taxing gasoline. And the most popular solution that's talked about is a tax on miles traveled, vehicle miles traveled. But the mechanism by which that gets worked out is highly complex as a technology matter, but more so even, I think, as a social matter, just in terms of how authorities sort of track how far your car goes and in some instances where it goes, more or less, to be able to charge you. It'll be an interesting space to watch. We have some companies that are looking at trying to solve that problem.
Yeah, one of the people I referred to that I walk with, my neighbor actually just got an EV, put in an installation into his home. He told me, and I'm curious what your reaction to this, that he figures that he's now paying, it's costing him about a quarter per kilometer to what he was paying when he was just driving a regular car.
Yeah, that makes sense. That would even be on the high end, I'd say.
Yeah, so that's really significant. Okay, you mentioned before Tesla, and everyone seems to know that it's become a household name, but it seems that China, and you mentioned this to me in the past, is way ahead of everyone else when it comes to EV manufacturing. Is a company like BYD going to become a household name?
Unquestionably, and in fact, just today, there's a big article in the New York Times on BYD, and BYD is the leading Chinese EV maker, but it is only one of dozens and dozens. And I think that's actually become very apparent here in Israel in the last year or two, as seemingly every week there's a new billboard with a new car company that no one ever heard of before. It's coming from China. So there are a lot of issues here that we can go in any one of many directions. But I'll just start by saying that, in 2009, when we were still doing Better Place, and I was perched in Washington, D.C. for a number of months, trying to get the new Obama administration to recognize the opportunity to bet on EVs. And that was a very perspicuous moment for them to do so, because GM had gone bankrupt at the very end of the Bush administration. Obama set up a task force to figure out what to do with GM and also with Chrysler. And we were able to sort of penetrate that task force. In fact, some of the people on it are friends of mine to this day. And to make the case that GM should have been bailed out only as an EV company. And part of that argument was that China had announced right at that time, around January, February of 2009, its intention to make a huge bet on electric cars. This was no secret. This was the subject of a front page story in the New York Times. But I don't think people understood that what they were effectively doing was just like the third world countries that never installed landlines for their phones, but went right to cellular. But even more than that, because they also did an unbelievably thorough job of locking up the supply chain of everything in batteries and electric cars, to the extent at which today, even the China, even the EVs that are made outside China, invariably have to purchase minerals, cells, other materials in the supply chain from China. The dominance is simply staggering, both on the raw material side and the manufacturing side. And because of their labor advantage and because of the government backing, they're able to make these vehicles that are very high quality and at very low prices. And we're seeing that reflected here in Israel, where there's no protection on these vehicles coming in. In the US, there's a 25% tariff, and there's some talk that it might have to be raised because it might not be enough to keep out the
Wow.
EVs. And in Europe, there is an internal debate going on. Germany relies heavily on selling cars into the Chinese market still, and is wary of protecting, but France, desperately wants to put barriers. And it's a very profound question, because I think in a totally free market and totally free trade world, which I would never have thought to argue anything against some number of years ago, but in that kind of a world, I think the Chinese would come to completely dominate the auto industry. Period. Full stop. Tesla, is an outlier, and we can talk about them. But they obviously have the biggest head start on EVs outside of China. But the American traditional automakers, European traditional automakers, even the Koreans, it's not clear that they could compete at all in a world in which China was fully unleashed.
I don't recall off the top of my head. You probably know when Warren Buffett came in, he seemed to be very much ahead of the curve, and I know it's been proven to be a great investment for Berkshire Hathaway.
I do recall, actually, it was many years ago that Buffett made that investment. I think it was his second investment outside of the US, and his first, I believe, was here in Israel, Yiscah.
Iskar, right. Okay, and he did well with that one as well. So just to follow up, in other words, you're right. You see all these, I see cars, usually you can sort of tell by the grill or some shape that you know what car it is, but these are like ones you got to pull right up next to and you see a name you never heard of before. But is there a distinction in terms of quality between, let's say, a BYD and some of these other companies?
You mean amongst the Chinese cars?
Yes, yeah, correct.
They do come at a variety of price points, and I'm sure that there's some quality reflected in that. But remember, an EV is actually a much simpler device, and it really is more of a device than it is a machine in the way that an internal combustion car is. So there's a lot less that can go wrong. Sort of the fit and finish and polish and all of that might be a slightly lower quality in some of the Chinese EVs, but I haven't heard from anyone that that they don't work. Everyone who has bought them seems very satisfied with the reliability.
All right, let me just go back to one thing you already touched upon. So, in terms of Israel finding a way to make up for that tax revenue, is it realistic? Or, I mean, is it all going to somehow fall back on the consumer, or are we going to actually be able to drive cars for less?
That's I'm not familiar enough with the fiscal environment in Israel to predict. I would guess, as most governments, they'll find a way to make it up. They'll find a way to get it from somewhere else. I would just if I was counseling, I would say to do that in a way that does not discourage adoption of EVs, because there are so many social benefits to having EVs. I'll just give you one example beyond the fact you don't have to pay into the global oil market as much. I used to have a slide, Better Place Days, that I showed all over the world and really astonished people with, which was the air quality index in Tel Aviv on 3 days, which was the day before Yom Kippur, on Yom Kippur, and the day after, where you know Israel runs an experiment and no other country does, taking all of the cars off the road, and the unbelievable impact of seeing all of the pollutants and contaminants in the air go to zero in just 24 hours of no cars is simply amazing. So who knows the health benefits that will be derived from saturating Israel with EVs as a result of clean air, never mind the better economics, better, you know, better products and all of that. However the government goes about making up the revenue that they need as a result of the declining gas tax revenue, I would hope that it does not adversely impact the adoption of EVs.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. And I'm thinking back, and you've probably been there, Michael, driving on one of those like 16 lane highways in Beijing, you know, about 4 o'clock in the afternoon in the winter. It looks like there's either fog rolling in or it's getting dark, but it was all, you know, call car pollution.
That's another thing that pushed the Chinese towards EVs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had to do some real work to get the Olympics, you know, a few years ago to clear the skies. So I'm going to wrap up. I think I already know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyways. You know, so if one of your children were buying their first car, okay, you know, between door number one is internal combustion, door number two is a hybrid, and door number three is EV.
Well, most of my kids actually know a lot more about the individual car market than I do. When I get asked by neighbors what car they should buy, I always turn them over to now to my youngest son, who has all statistics and prices and all of that. But I don't think any kid of mine is going to be in the market for an internal combustion car anytime soon.
Got it. Okay. Well, you've been very convincing. If people want to know more, we didn't talk about your fund today, but know more about what you do, other than, you know, help me learn a little about the whole transportation EV market. How do they can learn more about Maniv? And
they can find us at our website, maniv.com, M-A-N-I-V. And also on LinkedIn, and welcome people to check it out.
Well, I want to thank you very much, and we look forward to cleaner air, and I hope all your predictions come true, and it'll also be a lot quieter. That'll also be a benefit. Having once had an office years ago on Sderot Herzl in Yerushalayim, and now it's mostly for light rail. It's just incredible and if you go to downtown Jerusalem, you know, Yaffa, it's just a much different experience being in the center of town. So thank you again, and we look forward to hearing more.
Thanks a lot.
I hope you enjoyed our podcast. Feel free to visit us at www.pstein.com or look for Philip Stein and Associates on Facebook and LinkedIn.